On episode 387 of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Jennifer Carroll and discuss her book, Beyond Invincible. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/387.
Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness, the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is here for you. I'm your host, Alan Meisner. I'm an NSAM certified personal trainer with a specialization in corrective exercise and fitness nutrition. Let me be your coach as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go.
Our guest today is a former TV news reporter, wife, mother, desperate housewife, author, speaker, caregiver, and now widow. It's a really interesting conversation that we have about the life of her husband and dealing with illness. I think you're going to really, really enjoy this episode. With no further ado, here's Jennifer Carroll. Jennifer, welcome to 40 Plus Fitness.
Hi there. Hi, Alan. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. And, you know, I read your book, Beyond Invincible, Live Large, Live Long, and Leave a Profound Legacy. So I feel like I know you pretty well because you, the book itself was just so heartfelt and personal, what you went through with your husband, Phil, and the family, and just all of that. As you're reading it and you're thinking, okay, I'm the guy, I'm supposed to be the provider. But I can tell you, I felt a lump in my chest. And even though only 5% of men can show breast cancer, it's still a thing. I went and got checked out. Everything was cool. Doctor's like, no, it's not that. Charge on. And I did, although I am changing my lifestyle considerably by moving to Panama. But I really just appreciated how you shared that story. And then it wasn't just a story. It then was a series of lessons that I think all of us can learn from.
Well, thank you. Yes. It was an unfortunate situation to have to learn these lessons through, you know, like I say, the lessons we learned living while dying. But they were very eye-opening, and they were lessons that we came to realize, and my kids especially, you know, we learned at a younger age than I think typically learned. Learning things about just how to kind of say yes to saying no. We like to live in a world where, you know, it's just with infinite opportunities, it was just easy to just kind of try to do everything. And we had that mentality. But being faced with this life-threatening illness, it just forced us to prioritize our lives and recognize what truly matters. And so it has been an incredibly profound journey. Certainly not a journey I wish on anyone. It's been very tough, and every day I miss him tremendously. But like I say in my book and in my speaking, you know, life happens to us. What happens to us happens for us. And that sometimes these things that we don't understand that are bigger than us, that blindside us on an idle Tuesday, our messy parts of life can become our message. And our tests can become our testimony, and our trials can be, you know, just become something that we can share and share our stories and share our insights and make a difference in the lives of others by allowing them to kind of glean insight from what we've experienced, apply it to their lives, and hopefully come out better off. Like, I hope that you will share your sloth life. Am I saying that right? Sloth?
Yeah, the sloth. Yeah, sloth life. Yeah.
Sloth life. It's a mouthful. I want you to share it because I want to learn that lifestyle a little bit, just apply it a little bit to this crazy world we live in over here still, as you're enjoying the chickens and the tranquility of this amazing new journey of yours.
And I think that's really, you know, in the book, as I went through, it's like you introduced me to Phil, you know, through stories and through just, you know, who he was in the book. And I was like, this is the kind of guy I would just love to sit down and have a dinner with or have a drink with. And so I just really kind of acclimated to who he was and what he was doing in his business life and his family life and all that. And just saying, you know, this was just a really cool guy. And then unfortunately, he got cancer. And then there's a challenge and there's some things that you're going through. Can you take just a minute to kind of introduce Phil so we know who we're talking about?
Okay. So Phil, was larger than life and very he was an alpha personality. He absolutely thought he was invincible. He had this invincible spirit, entrepreneur, really just always saw the hole in the donut. He saw the opportunity. He used to coach our son's hockey team when he was a little dude. And he used to tell these little guys that were all keen to like go out on the ice and score a goal. Cause of course that's life. That's the metaphor. And that's what all they wanted to do. And he'd say, guys, you have to, you know, when you're racing towards the net, you got to shoot. You can't shoot at the goalie because the goalie is the obstacle. It's the barrier to what you want. You have to see the holes around the goalie because those are the opportunities. And that was Phil. He did not see obstacles. He saw opportunities. And when the kids grew up and they'd say, Dad, I have a problem. They'd come with him with weeping eyes and Dad, this happened, that happened. They'd say, Austin, we don't have problems. We have opportunities. And anything that came his way just was, you know, he had these rose colored glasses and he could just somehow see the positive in everything. So that was Phil in a nutshell, larger than life. And, but the downside of that, that was the greatest part. That was the part that we just all tapped into and how he lived every day to leave his legacy and why people remember him. He just had this intense power and ability to see the goodness in all things. But he also, it became his demise because he truly felt so invincible, but he was going to fix it. Like most alpha personalities, most, I don't know if I could just generalize to men, but let's just say fathers, husbands, you know, are heroes. They have to take care of everything. They're fix it guys. They're going to take care of their wives. They're going to take care of their staff. They're going to take care of their kids. They can take care of everything. Do you know what Phil didn't realize is that he made this assumption that if he was fit and had abs and could run marathons and ate organic, that he was healthy. And in fact, that is a disconnect. He wasn't healthy. In fact, he had symptoms of prostate cancer that he ignored. And he never went to the doctor because he knew more than doctors. He understood his body and he was young and he just didn't go to doctors. The first time he ever sat across a desk of a doctor in his life, the doctor looked at him and said, Phil, you have stage 4 prostate cancer and you're fighting for your life. And so you can feel me getting a bit choked up here because my passion for writing this book is to not only share with the world this incredible man's story about how he lived large with this great passion and vision for life and making life happen, but I also want to add significance to his death and bring meaning to his death by sharing his story and really trying to just get this message of proactive health out to a personality of that alpha personality that just thinks they can handle everything. They can take care of everything because in fact, Bill couldn't. And so, you know, sadly at 52, he passed away and he, you know, didn't take care of his health the way he could have and been a bit more proactive. So that's really the passion behind the book and the bottom line message of just being proactive about your health and recognizing the significance of health, which I know is what your whole platform is all about, is health and fitness.
Yeah. And again, I think that's one of the kind of the core tenets out of this is this, you know, this could have just been a story and a good story at that. Cause I really like the guy. I've never met him, but
he would like him.
And I really like him. And so I get that. It's just what I liked so much was that then, okay, you know, as we start looking at our health, and it's something that I'm really kind of wrapping my mind around more and more is that, you know, perception is reality in many cases, but when you're looking at your wellness, you know, so beyond just the general health, it's not just, okay, what is the biopsy? What is the blood test? What does that show? What is, you know, what's your fitness level? Like you said, you know, do you have six pack abs and those types of things, but it's this, are you living the quality of life? Are you having the things that, you know, you enjoy? And that kind of goes on this concept of having a positive view. And it is something that as I've, you know, had a conversation with you before we got on and then now have, you know, from the book is that there's this common thread that runs across your message and your life is, okay, I still need to be positive. Bad things are happening, but I still need to be positive. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So the first thing that resonates with me is this concept that you just brought up. And I'm sure it's the philosophy behind why you picked up your wife, Wendy, and you moved a long way away to live, put yourself in a in a life that has a little bit more rest, that has more of a sloth life. Phil lived this intense life where he really said no to nothing and had, we all have stress. Stress gets us out of bed. Stress allows us to accomplish great things. Stress gets us, you know, accomplish, but there is de-stress. And so there's, you know, obviously a difference. And I know you know the difference. And I think people generally know the difference between stress and de-stress. Phil learned that too late. We have, you know, we might have a bucket list. People understand the concept of a bucket list. Well, we created something, and I talk about it in the book, called the Chucket List, because all of a sudden in our lives, we just didn't have infinite opportunities of the world, you know, is our oyster. We had, Bill was fighting for his life, and so he couldn't even really travel. He was hooked to an oxygen tank, and so all of a sudden these things would come at us, and we had to have a way of figuring out how to choose what to do and not to do. And what we did is we write our core values every year as part of what we do to set our goals. So we made a list of what are our core values. And number one had to be health, love, family, faith. We wrote these core values, and as life came at us, we would just look and see if they fell under those values. And if they didn't, we actually physically had a bucket on the counter. We had little note cards, little index cards. We'd write it down. We'd throw it in the bucket, and just that something to do with like just crinkling up that piece of paper and throwing it away just de-stressed us, because we couldn't do all these things. And we were able to justify the importance of doing the things we chose to do, which aligned with our values, and chucking the things that didn't align with our values, and allowing us to experience rest. And the concept of rest is a very interesting concept. I mean, there's a story of artists that were given a blank canvas and asked to draw a picture representing rest. And one artist drew this very serene setting out in the mountains of a mountainous mountains and trees and this dead calm lake. And that was his depiction of rest, which makes sense. The other artist painted this tumultuous waterfall, this raging waterfall, and pouring down, you could see the mist from the waterfall in this picture. And then in through the waterfall was this branch of a tree. And at the end of the branch of a tree was a little nest. And on top of that little nest was a little bird, a little sparrow sitting on her egg. And that was his representation of rest. And the point is with this metaphorical story is that in our lives of crazy chaos and noise coming at us, bombarding us from all angles, phones, internet, emails, people demanding us doing all these different things, we can still find rest even in this crazy world we live. I don't know if you've been to India, but I've been to India on a speaking tour, and it was amazing to see this populated, crazy world with no rhyme or reason and just traffic everywhere and just people. And in amongst this madness, you'd look and you'd see this man sitting on the side of the road in lotus, meditating. Like, what? And I just found it so fascinating to see these people that in this world that was just so crazy, even compared to what we live, you know, in the Western society, they were able to find rest through peace and meditation and what you probably called the sloth life. And that was something that Phil never discovered until he got sick. And it is something that is so important to health, to have that time of rest and to have meditation and to have sloth moments where you are breathing and in a place where you can hear the whispers of, you know, the omens and of life, and just see the significance of what really matters and kind of boil it down to what we really value and just aligning our choices with those things that we value in life.
Yeah. And I really, you know, I think that was a cool thing. I did actually go to India, and I found it odd. They have a timer to when the light's going to turn green. And it is literally like they're lining up for the Indy 500 with a cow, with a taxi, with a tut-tut, and they all take off at the same time. Nuts. And they're all honking their horns so they don't hit each other, because they can't physically see everything that's going on. They're just listening. And it's phenomenal. And you're right. Yeah, there's just the person sitting over on the side of the road. There's another person that, I guess, to make a living, they've picked up a broom and they're just sweeping.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, you know, everybody's making their way. And if we're all in that charge lifestyle all the time, you're right. We're not giving our body something that's extremely important for it to recover, to even enjoy a basic moment. And even you might not think that paradise of that mountain, or I'm not in this or that. These things can be found in your own backyard, you know, just going to the city park and just taking just a moment to take in a few breaths of fresh air, particularly as now, you know, we're into June and it's about to get warm. Take advantage of those good weather days and spend a little bit of time at the park. Spend a little bit of time just casually walking through the zoo, even if you don't have those grandkids. Sometimes just going and doing something that's very just fun and just relaxing is going to do a lot to add value to your day.
For sure. Yeah. And it's even like starting off your morning and just having, instead of diving on your phone and checking your messages and your emails, to just wake up and have a little moment to kind of ease into your day. They say ideally even 60 minutes of just either meditating or reading something inspiring or listening to a TED talk or doing something that just kind of eases you into the day, to set your day with that proper mindset instead of just diving into all of our to-do lists for that crazy world we live in.
Yeah. I have this book. It's called The Daily Stoic. And basically stoicism, and it's these little like 2 minute little vignette things that you can read each day. And I've had this book for like 3 years, and this is the first year that I've actually made every day. You know, I'm like, I'm sitting down.
Take
a moment to read. And like, I'm some say proud, but you know, of all the things I've accomplished in my life, this is actually something I'm pretty happy about.
That's cool. That's great. I know it's a big practice for me because I've just trying to stay positive myself and on this journey and get through this journey of loss is wake up in the morning and just, I write in the gratitude journal every morning and just take a minute and kind of reflect on all the, you know, the abundance that I have and then the how I'm so grateful for so many things and just the things that I'm looking forward to the day and kind of write down kind of what is a, like, what would the day be? What does success look like at the end of this day for me? What would 3 things be that would just make this day a successful, positive day? And I think by just setting those intentions first thing in the morning, before you start diving into all of your stuff and all the emails and all the follow-up, I think that's has been a very, very significant thing for me. And it's what I share with other people in not only this book, but I'm putting on women's retreats now moving forward that are called Illuminate You. And so I teach a lot about these setting goals and doing vision boards and aligning your values with your goal setting and the importance of having a mastering your morning. My daughter Jessica, who certainly has been on this journey of loss as well, she does retreats as well. And they're all based on master your morning, master your life. And it's just these rituals in that first hour of the morning, even an hour and a half, that just can set not only your morning, but by 8 o'clock, your day is pretty much set. And if you can set your mornings up right, you know, it really does set up your life the right way. And it's transformational.
It is. I'm probably not as good at that as I would like, but I I've chosen a lifestyle where I don't have to be as productive, if you will. For me, productivity is, you know, making sure one, I spent some time with my wife, you know, two, I've done the things I need to do for my clients. And beyond that, my work day's done. I can just, you know, relax if I need to, or I can do something.
That's good.
So I guess it's sad to say it took me a long, long time to get to this place. And, you know, I don't think I might've been as hard a charger as Phil, but I was a pretty hard charger myself. Mm-hmm. And I was actually training for a Spartan race and was doing this training and I had a trainer and I was working really hard, was getting really strong and everything was going the way I wanted it to. And then I tore my rotator cuff. And, you know, I was like, okay, well, what does this mean? And, you know, am I physically going to be able to do this thing? And I committed myself, you know, being the guy, yes, I can.
All right.
I can do this. And that's why there was a concept in your book that you called just keep swimming that I really liked, because I was like, okay, well, that's where I was. And now I might've been doing it for all the wrong reasons in the world. But I just really like the concept of when things aren't necessarily what you want them to be, just continuing that move forward, just saying, "What? Okay, I can't do overhead presses, obviously. What can I do?" And I changed out my workouts, working with my trainer. We figured out what I could do. And that meant when I went to actually finally went in and got surgery done and then into PT, I was in much better shape than a lot of other people would have been because they would have just quit. They would have said, okay, well, I hurt myself and I'm done. Can you kind of talk a little bit about the concept of to just keep swimming and how you use it?
Okay, yes. So we had little kids. We loved the movie Finding Nemo. I don't know if you were a fan of that movie, but it is a classic about little Nemo who gets lost and his dad and Dory. What's his dad's name? Anyway, but Dory. Dory was the little blue fish. And the two of them went on a journey and they had to end up in Australia and they were on a search for his long lost son who got picked up by some poachers, some fishermen. Anyway, it's a cute little story. But one scene in the story is where Dory and Nemo's dad, I forget his name, are in this whale. They got swallowed by a friggin' whale on this journey. And the metaphor is like in life, do you ever feel like you've been swallowed by a whale, right? And, you know, we're inside this whale thinking, okay, this is it. And there it smells and there's carcasses inside them and there are ribs. And you're like, this is it. This is it. We're done. We're swallowed by a whale. It's over. And as Nemo's dad is just, you know, they'll never see Nemo again. This is it. Dory busts into song. Just keep swimming, just keep swimming, just keep swimming. And we love this movie as a family, the Carroll family. And Phil, for some reason, took this and ran with it. And he used to put little signs all over the house, posted up on tack boards and things of little mantras. And one of them was always just keep swimming and just keep moving your feet. He had another philosophy of two steps forward, one step back. That's life. Like two steps forward, one step back. But you're still going to, as long as you keep moving forward, you're going to progress, even if it's just baby steps. And if you're back to Finding Nemo, after Dory busted the song and Nemo's dad doesn't give up, the whale throws them through the blowhole and they end up in the harbor of Sydney and they find Nemo. So it has a happy ending. But yes, the metaphor is to just keep swimming. And Phil really just did that. And it was amazing. I was so enamored with this man my whole life. He was just such a go-getter. He was just such a driver. He like I said, he never saw the obstacles. He only saw the opportunities. And he accomplished a lot of things. But I remember this one day, he was sitting out in this chair in our backyard. And it was, you know, he used to be this huge, big man that filled this big chair. And he was now just this waif of a man, and he had hooked to an oxygen tank. And I was watching, I was cleaning up his breakfast, and I noticed him reaching down into the well into the side of this chair. He'd obviously placed these little 2-pound weights. And one at a time, he started lifting these weights over his head, 2 pounds, little pink weights that I used to walk with. And I just, I watched him in awe. I thought, he's sitting there all by himself. He doesn't have a trainer. He doesn't know I'm looking. And here's a man who is dying, but he's still going to keep on swimming. He has the belief that my body's made to move and I'm going to keep moving and I'm going to fight this till the end. And he sat there and I watched him slowly and painfully lift these 2-pound weights over his head for 10, 15 minutes. And I had never been more in awe of a human being because I just couldn't believe that he was still fighting all on his own. And we kept those 2-pound weights on the kitchen counter for up to a year after he passed. And they were just such a metaphor to not give up. Because in life, we just have to keep moving forward. And many times we have races or Spartan races and we're athletic and we run into injuries. And we have to keep moving forward because no matter what, even my dying husband still found reason to keep strong enough for himself and his family to not ever really be dying. He was living while dying right up till his very last breath, which is just, you know, it was really incredible to watch that. And even on my journey of through my loss, I feel like I'm constantly thinking about that metaphor and thinking about those little 2-pound weights because it is a journey and none of us are insulated from loss and challenge and chaos. And how do we stay positive and keep on swimming when we hear the words, I'm leaving, you're fired, you're son or daughter has autism, you have an injury and you can't finish the race. I mean, we have various levels of these challenges, but I think it's just really important to just recognize that as long as we're moving forward, just one baby step at a time, and we're lifting a 2-pound weight up over our head, that that's how we can just keep our journey moving forward and not give up, not give up.
Yeah. And there's a lot of this going on in the world. You know, the rates of cancer just going up, and none of us are actually invincible. None of us are immune to cancer. Whether we lived a really healthy life or not, it's still something that could be there. And, you know, the worst part of this, and I'm right up in there, I'll put my hand up and say, me too, we don't get ourselves, as guys, we don't treat ourselves as well as we should. Women are a little better at going in and getting their mammograms and getting their thing done. Mm-hmm. For one reason or another, us guys are like, I don't feel sick, therefore I'm not. And that's not how this stuff works. So one of the clear messages out of the book that I want everyone to kind of take away from this is you're over 50 and you haven't gotten that appointment done, go get that appointment done. If it's the time, and basically they're saying you should, yes, you should. There's enough data out there to say it's likely to happen to you. So don't ignore it. We get insurance because we know that something could happen. We get auto insurance because we know something could happen that's outside of our control. And this is just kind of one of those insurance policies. By catching it early, you stand a much better chance of helping yourself. Can you kind of just, I mean, just, you know, I put the message out there, but that, to me, that was the message that came. I'd like to get your flavor on this as well, because I didn't want that to be a monologue, but I kind of took it, didn't I?
No, that's right. So, yes. And, you know, I look at it, I'm constantly talking to entrepreneurs and business people. It's just mostly my audience, partly because Phil is involved in a lot of different organizations, business organizations, and they know his story. So they've wanted me to share it with them. And it is this concept, like, treat your health like you treat your businesses, and do the due diligence on your health that you do in your businesses. I know these entrepreneurs, they, you know, they, whatever deal they're doing, they do all the due diligence. And they hire a slew of lawyers and they pay them a ton of money and they do all this research. And if there's one little red flag before they jump in, that's it. They walk away from a potential investment because of the research and the due diligence they've done on each of these deals. And I know Phil, I watched Phil do it for years, but I know he did not do that with his help. He just didn't get the information that he needed to make the right decision. And he did run marathons. He did eat organic. He was healthy. He did have a great physique. He looked extremely fit. He was fit. But inside, he really didn't believe in going to the doctor. In fact, he bragged about not going to the doctor or the dentist. And it really backfired on him. And it's not to say he had a very aggressive cancer. It might have taken his life anyway. But the fact is that if he had been a bit more proactive, or a lot more proactive about his health. And, you know, he was diagnosed at 47. I talk to men about getting a prostate check, not waiting till they're 50, because it's, you know, it's a testosterone-based test. It's PSA, so it's prostate-specific antigens in the blood that they're testing. It's not a perfect test, but it gives you a huge fighting chance if you can detect it early enough that you can do something about it. And if you can do something about it early enough, it really, there's a lot of other, I mean, Phil was 47 years old and he was diagnosed with prostate cancer, stage 4, and had to have a prostatectomy and was impotent at 47. I mean, just even, that's a whole other conversation of the challenges of a young man facing that. And it was horrific for him. And it was another whole story. But if you can catch it early enough, 97% of men survive this illness. So get the information, get a baseline at a younger age than 50. I know they say typically 50, but it's fed by the cancer is fed by testosterone. And so it is said that it's more aggressive in the younger men. So just get a prostate checked early enough that you can start a baseline. And then every year, every second year, just keep doing the test. And if it slightly goes up, then there's signs that maybe you could have prostate cancer and it can be dealt with. But ignoring symptoms. And once you have symptoms, Phil had symptoms where he was urinating a lot, couldn't empty his bladder. And because he was 47, these conversations weren't happening in the locker room where it automatically triggered him that he might have prostate cancer. He, you know, probably, you know, he was diagnosed a lot earlier than most men. And so I do try to get men to just include it in their annual checkup to have this test done in their 40s, just to be safe and to just know that information up front.
Yes.
So they can deal with it.
And that's it. You get so many more options when you catch these things early. So much is out of your control if it gets too aggressive, gets too far along. So Jennifer, if I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be, what are three strategies or tactics to get and stay well?
Yes. So I agree. I have like my retreats. I'm running my retreats now, and it's Illuminate You, and my three concepts are fun, fab, and frisky. So I think the fun factor is just to, you know, it's never too late to rediscover what turns you on. And so I really believe in a creative, you know, tapping into your creative genius. So one of the things I teach or introduce women potentially in these retreats is art, comedy, and dance, and just getting, you know, making sure that you're doing things that are fun, that keep you laughing, that keep you figuring out what turns you on about you. And then I think under the fab part is very much, you know, being fabulous is being healthy, is feeling alive, feeling vibrant. And health is making sure that you eat properly and is, as you know, very much being physically active and moving your body. But I also, if I could say one of the biggest things I've discovered in the last 10 years, because even when Phil was sick, and it's been 6 years since he passed, we didn't really value the concept of rest and meditation and like having staycations and going into your backyard and actually noticing that you have hummingbirds in your backyard that are really amazing to just watch and appreciate their flight and their little magical dances and their little whispers of messages. And we discovered that through this journey of Phil's illness and then my rediscovery of myself and my new life and kind of what is fun, fabulous, and frisky about me. And I think that that rest factor is very important. And the other thing, I think the number one thing to health as well is just trying to stay positive and choosing happiness. And that comes, you know, back to this, what turns you on to yourself? What is it that you find about yourself that makes you happy and keeps you positive and looking through the world through those rose-colored glasses? And so I think that's it. That's kind of just, those are probably my three things, is to be positive, to find rest and through meditation and just stillness. And then also just never stop trying to rediscover yourself and what turns you on and what keeps you alive and happy and being the best self you can be.
Those are really cool. Now, Jennifer, if someone wanted to learn more about you, learn more about the book and the retreats that you're doing, where would you like for me to send them?
Yeah, it's simple. Jennifer L. Carroll. My website is Jennifer L. Carroll. It's carroll.com. And on that, you know, on my website, you can certainly learn more about my book, Beyond Invincible. And there's a tab about the Illuminate You retreats that I'm putting on in Scottsdale, Arizona. I've got some intensive one-day retreats going on. And then I've got three-day retreats that are going on as well. And we tap into the rediscovering your fun, fab, and frisky selves. And we certainly have a lot of fun. And so that you can learn about if you want to get more information on those things. I also have some video footage of our family and Phil. Phil, I did a little video show on Phil's last year of life. And so he himself talks about some of the lessons he learned living this journey of life. And he's so positive, even in his last days. And so there's some footage on there. It was a show called Following Phil that we did on YouTube and Facebook. So you can tap into a whole bunch of different resources and things on my website.
Okay. Well, you can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/385, and I'll be sure to have a link there. So Jennifer, thank you so much for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness.
Well, thank you. And I really am really looking forward to following your journey in Panama. On your sloth life. Am I saying that right? I'm still not saying it right.
at the very least, because, you know, Tammy was on about 10 episodes ago. And so, yeah, I'm fairly certain as we get things organized here and get a little bit more into it, I'll have more episodes like that. So thank you for that.
Cool. That'll be great. I'm really looking forward to learning more about you. Thank you. This is really, really great to talk to you today.
All right. So how did you like that? I really enjoyed that conversation with Jennifer. She's got a really, really cool outlook on life, and things are really looking up for her. So I'm really, really happy to have had that conversation. I hope you took something valuable from today's show. You know, I wanted to give you a little bit of an update of what's going on around my world. As you know, I bought Island Fitness down here in Bocas del Toro, Panama. So I'm getting into the day-to-day of that. And it's kind of got my juices going to want to do a little bit more training than I've been doing. I'm not saying I've shrugged on any of that. I mean, I am working directly with my clients, but I really haven't gone out and said, hey, I want new clients. But I'm opening up 5 new slots for my one-on-one personal training. And these are very intense, very specialized, personalized training sessions that we have directly on the phone via email. You're part of the group, so there's also group accountability. It's a really cool set of features. I'd love to have you talk to me about it to discuss how one-on-one online personal training can help you reach all of your health and fitness goals. I know during the summer we get busy, things are, you know, here and there, and a lot of times our health and fitness goals just sort of fall by the wayside. And I don't want that to happen to you. If you have a coach, if you have a accountability, you can stay on track and enjoy your summer. So why don't you go ahead and just send me an email, alan@40plusfitnesspodcast.com. Again, that's alan@40plusfitnesspodcast.com. We can have a short little dialogue about it. I'll send you to the application form if it looks like you're a fit. And then I'm going to accept 5 new clients during the month of July. So starting July 1st, which is today, you want to get on that list. You want to go ahead and email me so I can get you in there. alan@40plusfitnesspodcast.com. Really looking forward to meeting you. Really looking forward to helping you reach your health and fitness goals. Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet John Little and discuss his book, The Time Savers Workout. Until then, have a happy and healthy day.